From WXXI News in Rochester, this is Connections. I'm Scott Feibusch, in for Evan Dawson. He will be back on Monday, and when he does, he'll find Rochester in a new era for writers and books. 35 years after founding the organization, Joe Flaherty officially retired last Friday. Kyle Semmel, who has been leading a similar writers' resource in Maryland, has returned to his native upstate New York to help writers and books turn the page. And in this hour of our Summer Book Week, they both join us here in studio to talk about what's next for writers and books, and also what's next for Joe Flaherty in Rochester's literary community. Welcome, Joe. Welcome, Kyle. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you, Scott. Good.
Thank you for having us.
We welcome you as well into the conversation, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Is our phone number on Twitter. I am at Scott Feibusch, and you can reach out to us that way as well. And Joe Flaherty, Friday the 17th, you cleaned off your desk, you walked out the door. How has the last week been for you?
Well, it was, on the one hand, it was kind of sad. One of the things I've loved the most about it is the job. Is the great staff have there and the camaraderie of coming in every day and doing great work together, but also, joking around and finding out what everybody else is up to in their lives. So that part of it was kind of sad to be knowing that that's going to be part of the past. On the other hand, the last year, I've spent kind of getting ready for this. One of the things, founding an organization like Writers and Books, which I did, it became obviously to me that leaving it was as important a task in a certain way as founding it, that it was really necessary and incumbent upon me to make sure that it's going to exist after I'm gone, because it wasn't really about me. It was about creating a resource for the community here and making sure that it's not only going to continue to exist, but to grow and prosper after it. So I spent a lot of this past year doing that. So, it's a very different experience, getting up and not coming to work like I used to. It's going to be a process of getting used to that.
When you were on here with us last year in our inaugural Summer Book Week, that was one of the things that we were talking about, was the beginning of this transitional process. And of course, one of the key pieces of this is finding the right successor. You had a field of, 50-some
We had about 53, I believe, people who applied for the job. And we advertised it nationally, lots of different publications that people who were involved with literature or the arts would know about. So we started out with about 53 and then kept going through a narrowing down process and, ended up with what we think is the absolutely best candidate we could have had in Kyle Semmel.
And Kyle, we welcome you to the studio. We hope this will be the first of many visits with you here on Connections and here at WXXI. Now, your background started out here in upstate New York in Livingston County. You've worked with Chad Post and with Open Letter Press, who were our guests yesterday as part of our publishers roundtable. So this is not an unfamiliar piece of the country for you.
No, not at all. And my family still lives in the area in Livingston County. One small correction from the beginning is that I am not coming directly from Bethesda and from the Writers' Center where I did work. I stopped working there in about 2011. I was most recently in Milwaukee where I was a literary translator solely, and I just translated books from my home office. And that's where I worked with Chad at Open Letter. So I'd never have worked for Open Letter, just as a translator.
What language do you translate from?
Danish primarily, but I've also translated some Norwegian.
We can talk a little more later in the hour about the challenges of literature in translation. What attracted you to the idea of getting then back into running a literary organization and in particular this challenge here in Rochester with taking over from somebody who has been, not just the founder, but for 35 years now. We should mention that Writers and Books in the midst of this is in the middle of its 35th anniversary celebration. There was the big one night for the Books Gala. So this is an interesting time to be coming in. What attracted you particularly to the Writers and Books job?
Well, I had reached a point in terms of translation, where I felt that I wanted a new challenge. I wanted to do something new. And I love working in a nonprofit environment, and I love working with people who have a passion for the mission of the organization. And in particular, the literary world, having worked at the Writers' Center for 4 years, I was really entranced by that work environment, by people who loved books, loved literature, and I wanted to get back into that. And I wasn't actively looking, in all honesty, for a job. As a literary translator, I was constantly busy. I had books coming in, and in some cases I had books lined up 8 months in advance that I knew as soon as I finished this one, I would move on to another one. So I wasn't actively searching, but I happened to subscribe to Poets and Writers, and I happened to see this ad, and suddenly everything was, I looked at the job requirements, and I thought, wow, I've done all of these things, and this might be a job that I would enjoy. And of course, I know Rochester very well. Having grown up in Western New York, I have long had a passionate interest in Western New York. All my family is still here. I love the area. And we have, my wife and I have a 5-year-old son. And the idea occurred to me that, wow, we could live in Rochester and he could grow up with his family, his grandparents around, and have a very different experience than the one he's getting currently in Milwaukee. So that was, all that came into play when looking at this job.
What sort of contact had you had previously with Writers and Books? Obviously, you'd heard of it. It's
yeah,
well known out there. What was your impression of it before you got into this process?
Well, I've heard of it, of course, and I knew of it by sheer coincidence. I have actually spoken to Joe. I had spoken to him several years ago while I was at the Writers' Center, just asking him advice. That's a lot of the things about the literary centers in the United States is that they have a kind of a mutual interest in helping each other. And so I called Joe. I don't know if you remember that, actually, but I did call Joe and asked him a question. I no longer know what the question was or what his answer was, but I did call him, as I called others at that time. So I never took courses or attended events at Writers and Books, but I also haven't lived in the area for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And when I was too young when Writers and Books was founded to do too much out here, and so I graduated from high school in 92 and moved on, and so I kind of was in that gap area where I never really did anything here in Rochester and Writers and Books, but it certainly knew of it. It's one of the organizations that, if you're into the literary center scene in the United States, you certainly do know of it.
So this process culminated in early May with the announcement that you were going to be coming in and taking over from Joe. Tell me a little bit about the process that led up to that. Joe, on your end, what was the winnowing process like? And Kyle, on your end, the interviewing process and the becoming comfortable with the idea of coming here and taking this new gig?
Well, we, from our point of view, Writers and Books, what we did was we formed a committee of people who were going to be, going through the candidates and interviewing them, et cetera. So we wanted to make sure it really represented a good cross-section of Writers and Books and the interests of people in it. So we had, in addition to myself, we had two other staff members. We had two board members. And then we had people who were past board members or people who had taught at Writers and Books or people who were from the community who had been involved with going through a succession process previously. So we had lots of different experiences of people, all of whom cared very much about the future of Writers and Books and having the right person in place. So we started with those 53 resumes which were sent in, and we narrowed that down to, I believe, just kind of going through them and seeing what experience and what was relevant they had in their background, to about 18. And at that point, we did phone interviews with all 18 people. And each of them lasted about a half an hour. And, you know, we asked them all sort of the same questions, at least to begin with, and then, you know, would veer from that depending on the kinds of answers and experience they had. And then we narrowed that down from 18 to 6 based on those interviews. And then we did Skype interviews with the remaining ones. And you know, we're able to kind of get a much better sense of them, you know, seeing them live, you know, on our computer screens. And then narrowed it down to 3 from that. So there was a constant winnowing process. And then we brought each of those 3 candidates in during a week, but each of them on a separate day. So we had a Monday, a Wednesday, and a Friday. And we asked them to meet with the staff, have lunch with the staff, actually, and get the staff an opportunity to talk to them. We had them meet with some board members, sat down with me for a while and, you know, more information they might want to know about the job. And then we had them make a presentation of a book. If they were to select a book for Rochester Reads, what would it be and why? And then we had a cocktail party, knowing that, you know, as executive director, you know, I've known over the years that, you know, being able to function at a cocktail party is very important. And then a meal with board members. So it was really kind of a snapshot of their ability to function in lots of different kind of circumstances that someone who's the executive director of an organization has to do, working with staff, working with board, working with donors, making presentations to an audience, et cetera. And then based on that, we selected Kyle as the next executive director.
And on your end, Kyle, what was the process like?
The process was wonderfully long. And I'm going to say this way. I was in the process of doing a translation, a large book, and I had another one lined up that I had to do, and it had to be done by June 30th. So for me, knowing in the beginning and actually knowing that the process was going to take longer, that they were going to be very, very careful about everything and that the steps were going to be measured, so to speak, that actually helped me. So I was, you know, I did the first interview, the phone interviews, and then some time passed, and then the second interview. So it actually worked out really, really well for me, in all honesty. It was the process is an important one. Obviously, with Joe, 35 years is a long time, and you want to make the best possible decision that you can. And so I certainly understood why the process was a longer one, and it made perfect sense to me. From that perspective, I was happy.
That's a significant thing, you know, coming in not just to take over an organization, but to take over an organization as the person who succeeds the founder of it. What were there reservations on your part about doing that, or what were your thoughts on that?
Yes, and that's something that I discussed in the interview process as well. I think anytime you follow a founding director in any organization, there are some risks involved, and Joe is an extremely dynamic individual who has done wonders for the literary community here in Rochester. And, you know, it's hard to follow in those kinds of shoes. And I fully admit that this is, you know, there's some nerve-wracking elements to that. But at the same time, it's a wonderful organization. Joe mentioned the staff earlier, and the staff is a terrific staff, and it is the transition has been made fairly smooth through the first 4 weeks that I've been here, because of Joe and because of the staff and just simply because of the foundation that's already in place. So I recognize and have always recognized that that is an inherent risk, you know, following up a founding director. But at the same time, it does feel natural. It feels right to me. It feels like this is an organization that understands that risk and that has taken all the right steps to make sure that it works out smoothly.
So let's talk about some of the programs. And I'm assuming, as we're doing Summer Book Week, that a lot of our listeners are familiar, at least in general, with writers and books, but perhaps not with some of the specific programs. And in particular, Kyle, you mentioned you've got your 5-year-old here, and one of the things that that Writers and Books is big for in the summer is programs for kids for reading, to get them involved in the world of literature. I should mention first, before we get into this, just a quick plug that tomorrow is Summer Book Week wraps up on Connections, that we will be talking about children's and young adult literature for both hours. Megan Mack will be hosting the first hour, and she will be talking about the big book fair over at Nazareth and talking with some readers. And then in the second hour, we will hear from local authors Linda Sue Park and Charles Benoit, both with us in our second hour tomorrow. I know because I already recorded that second hour. It's a good one, so you should listen. So children's literature, children's reading, and a lot going on this summer. Joe, you want to plug a little bit about what's ahead the next few weeks?
So we have our Summer Write program, which is a program that's week-long camps, literary camps for young people from the age of, actually some of them at this point, we begin at the age of five and go through 18 years old. So it's been growing rapidly every year. We're looking at the enrollment for this summer, and it turns out that compared to last year at the same time, we have 175 more enrolled students this year than we had at the comparable time last year. So it keeps growing. We keep adding, you know, more and more programs that would capture the interest of young people. So we start them with, you know, at the age of five, where obviously they're not writing, but we have them go through what are some of their favorite books that get read to them, and then do things with that aren't necessarily, for instance, they can create plays of characters based on their favorite books. They can do puppets, do little puppet plays, et cetera. And then we go up through, obviously, when you get to be a teen, you are into writing. And we do programs that are in poetry and in fiction and in writing, you know, teen books. And also, one of the ones that's very popular is that we have a class in writing the college essay, which, you know, the senior year or the end of your junior year, beginning of your senior year, you know, everybody's struggling with that. And so we have a class that says, you know, how do you go about best expressing yourself and letting a college admissions officer know who you are as a result of really looking inside, you know, what are my values, what do I want to get across, and make sure that they do a good job with it. But I'll just say that, you know, one of the things that we also do is we have our retreat center, which is the GEL Center, which is down in near Naples. And we have a number of programs that take place there for different age groups. So one of them is called Where's Walden, which is a kind of, you know, takeoff on Where's Waldo, where kids go down for a week. And they have we have a number of different people who work with them, with plant identification, with you know, going into the woods and listening to, you know, concentrating listening to the sounds of birds, et cetera, and then keeping journals. And then for the older kids, we do a program which is the Hunger Games, in which we actually go down and they actually stage a real Hunger Games. So they learn survival skills. They learn to build their own lean-to out of branches, et cetera. And then it culminates with them staying up all night and seeing who the winner is going to be. So we do, I mean, there's all kinds of programs for every age that really is just emphasizing that reading and writing are not necessarily things you do just in school. It's something that you want to really do throughout your life. And this is a way of getting kids involved. And also, you know, people talk about that summer loss of when kids aren't involved. And it's a way of really keeping them involved in reading and writing and allowing them to go back to school in the fall, like charged up about continuing to read and write.
Is it harder? And I'll pose this to both of you. It's one of the questions that's sort of been coming up as a running theme all week during Summer Book Week. Is it harder, especially with teens, to keep their attention focused on the printed word when everybody's got a screen in front of their face 24/7?
Do you want to take that, Kyle?
I don't know. I don't have a teenager. He's only five. So for him, he does not spend very much time on the screen at all. And we do a lot of reading and storytelling. But I cannot speak for teenagers exactly. other than to say that there certainly are some, and many we'll see next week when Summer Writes starts, who love books and who actively participate in book culture, who read and write. And so I think it really is, it varies, I would imagine. And many, of course, they still play games and video games, and they use iPads and whatnot. So I would imagine that it's a generation that is it's simply growing up knowing these different things that you can do either in books or you can, you know, use an iPad. I didn't obviously grow up in an age when you had all these excess computer type things to do. So it was reading or it was TV. So that's my answer. It's not a, you know.
Well, let me add to that. I mean, in a certain sense, we have a self-selecting group who come to the programs in the summer. And for many of them, for most of them, they love reading. They love writing. And what they find is that in some cases, it's the first time where they meet other kids who have that same real desire. So it's suddenly, you know, I've been reading this series of books, and another kid will say, well, I've been reading that, but how about this one? And there's great friendships that get formed immediately because they find others who like them. And in some cases, in school, they might be kind of one of a kind, you know, who's really sort of considered to be a geek and a reader. But when they come together, they find other kids who have exactly the same kind of interest that they do. So it's hard for me to say whether all kids nowadays are ones who are kind of have short attention spans and need to be constantly entertained. But certainly the ones that we do love the printed word, love books, love reading, and love writing. And it's a way of really getting them a chance to really work on that in a way that they can't in school, because so much of school nowadays is geared towards here's the test, here's what you have to study for, and a lot of creativity gets left out of it.
And I will add to that, the Writers and Books publishes a literary journal called Canvas, which is solely for teenagers, and it's published by a staff of, actually it's run by a staff of teenagers here in local high schools, and they are passionate about what they do. And I sat in on a meeting a couple weeks ago about their upcoming issue, and it's amazing how articulate they are and how passionate they are about the journal and about books in general. So I think in terms of the self-selecting, they are certainly a good group of teenagers who know what they're doing and what they want.
One more question before we go to break here about the self-selection. You don't have to go very far at all from where you are on University Avenue. You go a few blocks north, and you're quickly in one of the poorest parts of the city, where you have reading levels that are often way below grade level, where you have homes where kids in a lot of cases are growing up without access to books. What is the responsibility of a community organization to make sure that you don't just get the self-selected kids who are already those geeks?
Well, I mean, this summer, about a third of the students that we will have there are on full scholarship. So we've done a lot of work to make sure that we're not excluding kids who wouldn't normally be able to afford to take our programs. And in that case, it's still, in a certain sense, self-selecting, in that either the parents or the kids themselves have shown a predilection for, you know, for creativity and for writing and reading. They're going to be now within a larger group of kids who also have that, and that, again, it might not be something that they experience all the time in the school. So we do a lot of work to make sure that we are really representing the entire Rochester community and not just, families who could afford to take our programs.
And I would add to that one thing I would like to see, in addition to what we're already doing, is, in, you know, budget permitting, work with what I would call satellite type programs, where we would go into communities and have, you know, whether it's recreation centers or libraries, and see if we might be able to do some forms of workshops with kids in other communities, and communities who may not have an easy time of getting to Writers and Books, or even non-city kids, so moving into the country in Livingston County or Ontario County, and finding ways to reach a broader audience that simply by geography is far enough away where it's just not easy to get to writers and books.
And certainly that is an issue in rural areas too. As we go to break here on Connections Summer Book Week, I am Scott Feibusch in for Evan Dawson. We are talking with Joe Flaherty, who just retired after 35 years as the leader of Writers and Books, and his successor, Kyle Semmel. A quick word of praise for Joe. Ruth Thaler Carter on Twitter says, teaching at Writers and Books has been one of the most rewarding experiences of my professional life. So thanks, Joe.
Oh, thank you, Ruth.
So, we will take a quick break. We will be right back here on Connections. Ahead in our second hour of Connections, the characters Paul Newman and Philip Seymour Hoffman brought to life in the movie Nobody's Fool are back. Author Richard Russo is out with a new sequel, Everybody's Fool. He joins us to talk about the new book and about his life as a writer. Next hour, here on Connections Summer Book Week. We are back on Connections from WXXI, WRUR, and WEOS. I'm Scott Feibusch in for Evan Dawson. We are talking this hour about the transition at Writers and Books. Joe Flaherty retired last week after 35 years founding the organization. Kyle Semmel is his successor here by way of Milwaukee and Maryland before that. And then before that, Livingston County. Next hour, a quick plug, Richard Russo will be joining us from Maine, where he lives. He does have a new book out. It's called Everybody's Fool, a sequel to Nobody's Fool. And we're looking forward to spending an hour chatting with him. And with you as well, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Kyle, I want to ask, now that you've had a few weeks to start getting settled in here and now that you've had a week without Joe in the office, what are some of the next things on your agenda? How do you start moving forward now?
Well, my first and foremost priority is simply to get a handle on and understand the organization and all that it's doing and how it's doing it and really getting a sense of what can be done and what needs to be done. So really, I think it's a question of foundational practice and learning what happens on a day-to-day basis at the organization.
And then as you get past that, are there longer-term goals that you have in mind? Are there projects that you came in and looked and said, gee, you know, maybe we ought to be doing this?
Well, I mentioned the satellite idea. I really do feel strongly that I believe in the mission, and I believe that there's an audience out there who could really benefit from the work that we do, and that it may not be easy for that audience to reach, to come to Writers and Books. And that could include the rural audience in Livingston County, for example, or Genesee County. And it certainly includes the urban area here in Rochester. And I think that is a big idea that I'd like to keep going, just in terms of how to reach others and bring literature into others' lives. I think it's an important thing for, and in particular for the young people, which is one of the reasons that originally attracted me to Writers and Books when I saw all the programs they did for kids. It is a huge, wonderful thing, and that is the age when they are susceptible to you know, finding those new experiences. And some of the workshops that they do for the kids at Summer Write or at GEL, they are terrific programs. There's one, for example, that has a riding horses and writing component that's doing Summer Write. And that is the kind of thing that's not just a literature or a writing class. That is an experience. And it's that kind of creativity that makes Summer Write, I think, an exciting program. Whether it's the Harry Potter birthday celebration or just the Harry Potter week, it is the kind of thing that makes any person excited to be around a group of people who are excited to be around books. And so it's, you know, continuing that kind of tradition is a major goal, but just finding ways to carry that mission further and to reach further into the community.
What you ought to do is get a bus and fill it with books.
That's been done before.
And I know a guy who's available right now who has some experience in that department. In terms of what you do next, Joe, you've had a week now to not set the alarm, to not have the pressure of filing grant applications. You're not going to be completely absent from the organization going forward, I imagine.
No, I'm not. As a matter of fact, I'm actually on call for Kyle if as things come up that I know about that he doesn't, that I can help him with whether it be grants or anything else. I'm available for that. Also, one of my regrets after having worked 35 years at Writers and Books was when we were given a gift of the Gel Center, which was in the early 90s, we had plans for really expanding it and making it a kind of a national and international location for writers to come to. But I've never had, and the organization just has not had, the time to really spend on building that up. And so one of the things I have said when I was retiring is that I do want to remain involved with Writers and Books, working on building up the Gel Center and letting it become the location, the program that is going to be something that's going to be attract attention nationally. And so that I'll be working on that and kind of on a part-time basis. So that's, I'm not going away, and this is something that I've always wanted to be able to spend more time on, and I will be able to now.
Those resources are so important on a national level to writers. We've mentioned Chad a couple of times. He just got back, as he mentioned yesterday, from this writer's retreat in extremely remote Marfa, Texas. And I guess Naples is kind of like the middle of Manhattan compared to that, but certainly there's a place for that, and there really isn't anything like that in our immediate region. You sort of have to go out to Vermont or
exactly, or to Saratoga, to Yaddo and places like that. But we did recently do a national kind of survey of writers that we contacted through other writer centers that are like Writers and Books, and asked them, if you were able to come to a writer's retreat center that was located in the Finger Lakes, would you want to come? And some people said, well, I know the Finger Lakes. Yes, that would be great. And others, then we said, would you come if you knew that the Finger Lakes was an area in which there were like many wineries? And they said, well, that sounds a little more interesting, And then if there were, you knew that there were wineries, but there were also these outdoor activities that you could be involved with, hiking, et cetera. And, as each step we introduced what's there, more and more writers said, yes, I would love to come to it. So once if we build it, they will come. And this area is just so beautiful. There are so many resources, but there is not really a sort of location to attract artists and writers. And that's what we would like to make happen there.
We have long been too well kept a secret out there in the world.
Yes, exactly.
I want to take a few phone calls here on Connections with Evan Dawson. I'm Scott Feibusch, sitting in for Summer Book Week all week long, and we are talking with the outgoing and incoming directors of Writers and Books, Joe Flaherty and Kyle Semmel are both with us, and you as well at 844-295-TALK. And we go to Suzanne in Rochester. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to make a comment about three things that you had talked about so far. One was about very young children being engaged in writing. I think you were kind of talking about children who were 5 years old and maybe a little bit younger and maybe just a little bit older. You were talking about that they weren't into writing yet. And I was kind of surprised because I'm not a teacher or an education or anything like that, but I noticed that children in that age have a tremendous capability for storytelling. And so it occurred to me that there must be a way to tap into that, although they may not be able to put pencil to paper or typewriter or keyboard. They certainly have the skill and talent for telling fabulous stories of their own. Making, so I just wanted to highlight, don't write off children of that age to becoming writers, because as far as I know, the first step is being able to tell a story. And then the other comment was about young people being focused on video games, and from the video games that I've seen, the kids that I spend a little time with. They have, some of them have great stories, and so, you know, I'm not so sure that they aren't into reading, because all of the games aren't just blood and guts and shoot 'em ups. And then there's the graphic novel that seems to be taking great hold among young people in terms of both the graphics, the art part, as well as the storytelling in that. So I just wanted to highlight, don't write young people and, you know, their new entrees into literature, into the world of literature. Don't write them, off.
Well, I'm sorry if I did give that impression about the five-year-olds. And what I was saying really is that at that age, they may well not know how to write in terms of actually writing down something, but we work with them in terms of taking their ability to create stories to create plays, for instance. So they would be saying, okay, here's a character, and what would that character do? And then we have the person who is the teacher or the aide writing that down. So we do take their imagination. That's the whole point of it, is to... you know, take their imagination and work with it and you know, have that come to some sort of fruition in terms of a production of some kind. And then about the graphic novel, let me also mention that we do a program every year with the Memorial Art Gallery in which the students spend half the day at the art gallery and creating, you know, visual parts of a book that they will put together, and the other half working with us with writing. And what they do come out with then is the equivalent of a graphic novel. I mean, it's not going to be as long, obviously, in a week's time, but they are working on both the writing and also the visual aspect of it. So we do programs that create, you know, as much as possible working with what's of interest in their lives and what might be the way that they experience literature, which would be through a graphic novel.
And I would like to add I'm with you on the graphic novels and video game storytelling. I think there is a lot of good stuff happening and different ways of telling a story. And I don't mean to give an impression either that we're writing that off. I think, in fact, that there's some really exciting stuff happening. And Scott's question was a broader question simply about how do you bring young people to reading when they're doing other things, if they're, you know, if they're using the internet for Facebook or social media and not spending the time reading. Because I don't know how much time you spend on social media, but I do sense a change in how I read. Based on how much time I'm on social media. So if I'm on social media more, I'm reading less, and that goes without saying, of course, but there's a certain change in the brain, I think, that you find yourself, if you're reading a book, if suddenly there's a boring scene or whatever, it's like, okay, I'm going to go check the sports scores, or I'm going to go see what's going on Facebook. And well, I think that was Scott's broader...
You know, the other thing, too, is that it's this notion of capturing a thought in 40 characters, you know, that haiku is almost the same sort of thinking, right?
Sure.
So I just wanted to say that, you know, the movement, the future, is going to be a little bit different in terms of our language and the way we think. The brain research is already coming in on that. And so I'm going to hang up and listen to the rest of the show.
Okay. Let me just add one thing.
I just want to mention, too, that it was one of the things that we talked about yesterday. We had Rachel Hall on with us, and that ability to just be able to turn everything off and just dive deeply into a book is something that that is, I think, increasingly a value that perhaps we all took for granted for so many years.
But yes. Go ahead. Well, I just want to add, in terms of how, you know, our use of Facebook and texting, et cetera. There was an article recently in the New York Times, I believe, in which they were speculating that the period would become obsolete.
I saw that.
Did you see that? And that was very interesting, that if someone uses a period, people take that as a negative. That you're like trying to overemphasize something by saying period. That's the end, you know. And
in a text message or in a tweet.
A text message or a tweet, and they were speculating that could well, you know, move into regular, writing, and that it would become obsolete. And it's sort of interesting to see how use of social media does change how we write. You know, there's always now there's so many, you know, conjunctions that take place of words that to make it shorter because you want to, you know, get it on there fast. So that idea of how that will continue to affect our writing in the English language, of course, is one that's always very adaptable. So it'd be interesting to watch that.
It was one of the interesting points that they made was that the convention of using a period at the end of each sentence is a relatively modern one in the English language. And you go back to before the advent of printed English on a regular basis. It simply just wasn't there as much. One other thing, by the way, social media does not necessarily do well is convey pronunciations. My apologies to Ruth Toller Carter for having mispronounced her name earlier. Sorry about that, Ruth. 844-295-8255 is the phone number, 844-295-TALK. We've got just about 10 minutes left with Joe Flaherty and Kyle Semmel and the big transition at Writers and Books, which is also turning 35 years old this year. Hoover is with us from Pittsford. Hi, Hoover. You got a question for Kyle?
For both of them, actually. A great program today, by
Thanks.
The way. Kyle, I'm going to ask the questions, and I'm going to take the answer off the air. Kyle, my question for you is, do you have any plans or any ideas or thoughts about doing any programs in conjunction with the Monroe County or Rochester library systems, because we've got all these big institutional buildings around town and wonderful staff and collection of books and literature and research materials. And, you know, I just wondered if you had any thoughts and ideas about doing some programs that might combine the opportunities for both institutions. And then Joe, great career, 35 years. I just want to know, Irishmen are and women are renowned for storytelling. I was wondering if you'd be willing to do a P&T night. It'd be a pint and a tail night someplace. I'll take the answers off the air.
Sounds promising. Thanks so much. Of course, you have some new brewery neighbors over in the neighborhood of the arts, too.
Well, that's true. Three Heads Brewery.
That
yes.
could work out very nicely there, perhaps.
To answer his question, I'm very open to ideas like that. I don't have anything specific with regards to the library system, but that is something that I would be very interested in. We certainly, I've spoken with a couple of people from the Monroe County Schools and hopeful that maybe something we can do there as well. And the library system would be a terrific obvious place to also do something.
Right. Well, just quickly, and I think there was actually a librarian on this week from Greece. We are
yes.
doing writing programs at the Greece Public Library this summer. And also the Fairport Library got in touch with us about wanting to do the same thing. So, you know, we're reaching out to the libraries. They're reaching out to us. So we'll obviously be doing more. And certainly when we do Rochester Reads, we have a number of programs in which the author is in town or discussions prior to the author arriving that take place in a number of the libraries throughout the county.
And we had your most recent Rochester Reads author, Sonia Livingston, was on
yes.
with us
yeah.
earlier this week in a fascinating conversation, and she's in Ireland now.
Yes. And as to that last question, I'd be more than willing to do a P&T, and he can
that
get
sounds...
in touch with me about exactly time and place.
Sounds like an event I could be compelled to show up for, too. Let me ask you, Joe, in addition to continuing to be involved with the Gell Center and with other Writers and Books programs, what else, now that you've got some time, what else is on your agenda? And in particular, since we've been asking the question of everybody this week and we're down to our last few minutes here, what's on your summer reading list?
Well, one of the things, let me just add that in terms of what I'm going to be doing is I have been writing a kind of a memoir of sorts, which is both about the history of Writers and Books and the number of the writers that I've met along the way. And I want to be able to devote more time to that as I go along. So one of the things on my summer reading list is interesting because of Kyle being here and being a translator is that I love the Scandinavian detective writers. And so there are a number of ones I do want to be catching up on that I haven't had enough time. And there is one last book, it turns out, that in the Kurt Wallander series, which I happen to like, which I never knew existed, actually, until quite recently. So that's one specific mm-hmm. book. But I really like what's happened to the basically American detective story as it's been incorporated in Scandinavia, because I think it's really some of the best writers who are working in that genre there.
And I am I'm in the process of finishing up a translation that's due next week, I believe, and I have about 16,000 words left to revise and edit.
That's a lot.
It's not that well. It's actually not that many. No. I don't. It's doable, but that's really been, in addition, obviously, working now at Writers and Books, it's changed the pattern of my translation time. But that is what I do when I get up at 5 in the morning, and I do that for a couple hours, and then go to Writers and Books. So, but really, I've been focusing on that. So that's been my my chief reading at this point.
Is it tough to read for pleasure when that's your work all day?
No, not at all. In fact, it's great to get away from it. Typically, I would always translate in the morning and read at night. Here it's kind of just thrown out a little bit out of whack. So I'm not doing as much reading because I'm usually pretty tired. Plus, I have other Writers and Books type things to read at night. So yeah.
Joe, you were asking during the break this hour how we got Richard Russo on for next hour. And the answer is we asked, and he said yes. Has there been anybody in 35 years who's the great white whale out there that you've always wanted to get involved in something with Writers and Books and have never been able to get?
Wow, there's a lot of them. I'm just trying to think of who, you know. Recently, I'm trying to think. You know, we've over the years, what's happened in terms of us getting writers is that when we started getting writers, there was it was much easier to do than it is now. And what's happened is that a lot of college campuses now bring in writers to make appearances there, which didn't exist before. I mean, it's hard to believe, but back, 30 years ago, writers were not the kind of stars that they are nowadays. And so it'd be very, very infrequently that a writer would appear on a college campus. But now they have lots of money to work with because all of the students, you know, part of their money goes into the fund, and they can spend a lot of money on writers. And so it's kind of difficult to get what would be considered the big name writers than it used to be. But I think what we've been concentrating on more is, you know, with our debut novel series and with Rochester Reads is who are going to be the really great writers of tomorrow that people don't know about now, and taking that as a kind of a special niche for us to be working in of looking around and say, here's who you're going to really be hearing about 5 years from now, and now you don't know about it, but here's a chance to really see them at the start of their careers. So in terms of the big names, I'm just trying to think of who some of them might be, but now I think less about that and more about who are the writers who are really going to be the great ones, and let's read their books and find out about them.
I guess my Harper Lee Book Week hour just isn't going to happen, apparently. Kyle, anybody in particular that you'd love to get here?
Well, I'm with Joe in that I think there's a great large pool of younger writers, or not necessarily younger, but less established writers who are out there who are under the radar. And that would be, I don't know if I have a specific one. There are so many that I know, certainly from the world of literature and the world of literary centers. I don't think I have a specific one other than the one that I did my presentation for. Tiare Jones is, I think, a fantastic writer. Leaving Atlanta is her the book that I did the presentation for. But, there are so many writers, it's hard to pinpoint one. I will say that since I'm a translator, I'm very big on translation, and I would love to see events with featuring translators and their authors. That is translators and the authors they translate. That would be a nice thing, and it would be nice to see, you know, some sort of work with, you know, BOA and Open Letter and Writers and Books doing something together to see, you know, how can we go with these their presses and get their authors and figure out some way to have events featuring some of these great authors that are in many ways, in many cases, not as well known here in Rochester.
I want to close because we're down to our last minute and a half here. I wanted to close just with some quick thoughts on the place. You know, if you left Rochester 20 years ago and came back now, I think you've probably found a city that's rather different from the one that you left in terms of the neighborhood of the arts, in terms of what's built up around this resource that Joe has created. What is the importance of place to what you do at Writers and Books?
Well, place is always important, psychologically, emotionally. But it is a vastly different place, but at the same time, it's a wonderful place. It's a great literary scene, and I'm happy to be here.
Joe, some quick final thoughts from you?
Well, you know, when we started, there wasn't really a neighborhood of the arts. Now there is. It's one of the fastest growing, most interesting parts of the city, and we played a part, a big role in that. So I feel very good about that.
Our hats are off to you, Joe Flaherty. Thank you so much for coming in your retirement to be with us. And Kyle Semmel, welcome. Hopefully we'll have many more discussions with you in your new role at Writers and Books. I'm Scott Feibusch. Thanks to Kat Schwartz behind the audio console and our producer, Megan Mack. We are back right after the news. We will be talking with Richard Russo about his new novel, Everybody's Fool. Stay with us here on Connections.